98.1 WGN. Hey there, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks for being with us today and sharing part of your Saturday with us. Always grateful to you for that. Lots to do on the program today. We're going to be in just a bit talking about how the Girl Scouts are introducing badges and some strategies to try to get more young women into STEM fields. And we're going to be talking about how some Chicago households might be paying a lot more for heat this winter and why. And of course, we're going to take a look at some data around Black Friday from yesterday and see how that looks and how it's looked in years past and all the good stuff. But right now, we're joined by Zachary Miter, who's a reporter at Bloomberg News, who wrote a really interesting story. It's a data analysis. It's very, very interesting. And for those of you who follow me on Twitter, I'll be sure and share it after the program so you can sit down and read it for yourself, because it is really fascinating. It is all about a system of predatory lending that is preying upon and hurting small businesses in America. And of course, we're thinking of that today because today is Small Business Saturday. Zachary, welcome to the program. Thank you for being with us today.
Glad to be here, Amy.
So talk us through this story, because, you know, even within just paragraphs of reading it, it doesn't seem believable. It seems so hard to imagine that this practice is happening. But for those who perhaps have not read this story or familiar with it, talk us through the basics of what this even is.
Sure. So if you own a small business, you very likely might be getting calls from salesmen. Like every day, some people say a dozen times a day, they get calls, emails, faxes from firms that are offering very fast money with almost no paperwork. They'll say, you know, we'll give you $10,000, and they can turn it around in like a day or two. That's how fast it is. And so this business has only really been big for about a decade. It's a relatively new business. It's called Merchant Cash Advance. And the interest rates can be up to 400% or more. They're very, very high interest. You pay them back daily over a period of maybe 3 months. So say you borrow $10,000, you might have to pay back $15,000 over the course of 3 months. That's the cash advance industry. But what we're writing about is this technique that the industry has figured out how to use just really in the past 3 years or so to essentially go after people who they think aren't paying them back or they claim aren't paying them back by actually going into their bank accounts and taking the money out. And they can do this legally through kind of like this series of different legal maneuvers that haven't really gotten any attention before, even though it's basically totally transformed this industry and become extremely common. But we found over 25,000 examples, almost all of which were in the past 2 years, against businesses all across the country, Illinois and everywhere else.
And is it, it seems like, because it is so predatory and it's done through legal channels, so it looks on paper like it's perfectly okay to do, it seems like it would be something that is very difficult for a small business owner to recover from.
That's right. So typically what happens is when they borrow the money, the small business has to sign these papers, and a lot of times they may not really fully understand what they're signing. What it does is it gives the lender the right to go to court at any time in the future if they want to, and basically have the court find in their favor against the defendant without any hearing or notice or trial. And so after that happens, they can begin to enforce that court judgment and go after the borrower's assets. And so a lot of folks don't really realize that that can all happen without any, not even a heads up. It can just happen unilaterally without any notice once they've signed that piece of paper.
And again, for those of you who follow me on social media, I'm going to tweet this story out because I want you all to read it for yourselves, because it's really, really interesting. And there's so much good data and so many wonderful details in it. Why this story? What found you initially about this story that made you go down this reporting path?
Sure. We've been following this industry for a few years, a colleague of mine, Zeke Fox, and I. But what struck our attention this summer was somebody mentioned to us that, you know, the industry started to use this legal instrument called a confession of judgment that we'd never heard of. And when we looked it up online, it was kind of hard to get good data, but it was clear that this was a huge practice. It's, you know, 25,000 times against businesses all across the country. These are businesses where the lender is claiming some kind of default or they didn't make a payment. and they're going after them for the full amount of judgment and very often seizing their bank accounts or calling up their customers and demanding that the customers hand over money to the lender rather than to, you know, the vendor.
So essentially this document, go ahead.
So basically we just started digging into it and trying to find the data, and we were able to kind of reconstruct a picture in the data of what's going on. And this happened very recently, and it's kind of taken over this industry, the merchant cash advance industry. And it's become so powerful that, you know, because there's no checks and balances, a lender can, for instance, go into court and claim a default when you didn't default, and there's nothing you can do about it, and that allows them to get all their money up front, plus they can tack on extra fees. So they can make money by declaring a loan in default. They can also, we've seen plenty of examples where they've forged these confessions or forged other legal documents or exaggerated how much people owe. Those are complaints that we got pretty commonly from customers who had these judgments filed against them.
And this seems like it's not even possible. You know, it seems so far-fetched. It seems like fiction. But nonetheless, as you start to read about this particular document and what it entitles people to do on your behalf, it gets quite scary for small businesses. So let's look forward then. What's next? As a result of doing this work, has there been a stir, or is there anyone working to change this or protect small businesses in this way?
That's a great question. A story just came out a few days ago, and we're hoping that, eventually we want people to read the story. And there's a lot of different things that the state could do. You know, part of this is, you know, your reader or your listeners are mostly probably in the Chicago area. People in the Chicago area, if they borrow money from one of these lenders, are very likely going to have a judgment against them in the state of New York. So the national industry uses New York, even for people who are borrowing all over across the country. And so it's because New York is especially friendly to this practice. They file everything in New York. So you'll get a judgment against you from signed by a county clerk in some rural county in upstate New York. But that will be powerful enough to actually allow them to go into your bank account and take it. So there are things that that the state of New York could do that would limit this practice. And there's also regulatory things that either federal or state regulators could do. There's not much discussion of regulating this on the national level. There are a few states talking about doing things in terms of regulation, but so far we haven't seen much.
Well, I hope that your story reaches far and wide and some change begins to occur, because, it's such a shocking practice. It doesn't seem like it's even possible. But nonetheless, again, for those of you who follow me on social media, I'll be sure and share this story because I want you to read the whole thing for yourself. It is really, really fascinating. Zachary Miter, reporter at Bloomberg News, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Amy.
You bet. All right, we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we are going to be talking about the plan that how Girl Scouts organization is trying to help encourage more young women to get into STEM fields through badges and projects, all that good stuff and more when we return on 720 WGN. Hey there, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. We are joined now by Ali Marotti, business reporter at Chicago Tribune, who wrote about a plan that the Girl Scouts have to encourage more girls to enter STEM fields. You know, a little bit earlier before the show, I was talking with John Williams about how the badge system has changed so much for Girl Scouts. When I was a Girl Scout, we didn't know the word STEM. We weren't even thinking about so many of these things. But, I'm a lifelong Girl Scout. Allie, welcome to the program. Talk to me about these badges and these programs to help more Girl Scouts enter STEM.
Yeah, sure thing. Thanks for having me. So I think what they're trying to do here is introduce these badges that, you know, they're not just your stereotypical you know, STEM roles, like women in a laboratory. They're looking at technology and just more up-to-date careers, kind of to train these girls and help them see that there's something out there besides what they just picture as a scientist in their head. So the one that I was focusing on in the story is the cybersecurity badge, and it was just introduced and rolled out earlier this year, I think in July. And it was only for the girls who are kindergarten through fifth grade, and then they'll roll it out for the older girls. They don't have a set timeline, but in the near future. And there are a few different levels you can get, and I myself was not a Girl Scout, so I'm not super familiar with how the badges work, so I was learning this as I went. But yeah, it was really interesting. You know, I was kind of going into it like, how are they going to teach these girls? The girls I was with were about 10 or 11 years old. Like, how are they going to teach them about cybersecurity? This is something that I have a hard time grasping, you know, as an adult. And they did it really well. It was really kind of fun to see the girls learning it, and they picked up on it so quickly. You know, one of the first activities they did was writing their initials in binary code. And one of the girls was just like, yeah, this is how computers interpret what we type. You know, they just instantly got it. So it was really interesting to watch.
That's very cool. And so what, you know, how big is the badge project? Is it an ongoing project they need to complete, or are there one-offs that are very focused on things like cybersecurity and binary language and things like that?
Yeah, so there is kind of different, kind of all of the above, I guess. So the workshop I went to, they were earning a cybersecurity badge there. Then they also have this thing called journeys that are kind of more in-depth and more, you know, they just learn more about it and takes longer. But this one that I went to, you know, when the girls or when the troops earn a badge, it can be, you know, a parent can teach it, a troop leader can teach the skill, and the Girl Scouts has done a really good job about rolling out, like, training for the troop leaders or whoever's going to teach these girls the skills. But also corporations can get involved, right? And that's something we're seeing a lot with these cybersecurity badges and the STEM badges in general. But with the cybersecurity one, it was at Northern Trust. There were three women leading the workshop, and they all worked in cybersecurity. One was a coder, you know, that kind of stuff. So they had a passion for this too. You know, they were kind of talking like, how can we make sure more girls get involved in STEM? What can we do? And so then they got in touch with the Girl Scouts, and they offered this workshop for them. But yeah, for some of the other ones that they've rolled out recently, and this is an effort that's been going on for a while. I'm not sure how long, but fairly recently. There's a lot of other badges as well, but you know, they get curriculum from places like NASA even, and Google, and just other large companies like that that help kind of roll out curriculum for these girls to learn about the roles that can be available for them, you know, when they get older.
I wonder if they let me go back and redo all of my badges, because these sound pretty cool.
Oh, I'm sure they would.
That's a far cry from the 1986 Cookie Safari badge that I got. Quite different.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know. Far cry from, like, sewing and baking brownies,
well,
right?
Yeah, there was, like, sewing and, like, typing and office skills and things like that, and now they're so different. And even the way, you know, cookies are sold are so different. I was talking with some Girl Scouts not too long ago that were selling their cookies and all that, and she was like, you just went up to a door? Like, you just, like, rang the bell? What? You didn't make, like, a Facebook page? You didn't, like, bring it to your parents to take to work? And I was like, no.
It was very analog.
Walk around and give my sales pitch. And that just blew their minds. But then it blew my mind that, you know, they had all these cool digital tools. So I'm glad to know that the Girl Scouts are evolving with the times. And so is this, you know, you're talking about Northern Trust and all this. What about businesses that want to get involved and professionals that feel, you know, hey, I could mentor here. I could be useful. How can they get involved with the Girl Scouts?
Yeah, you can just reach out to them. I know that I was looking around on one of their websites earlier, and so there's the Girl Scouts of America, which is a nationwide organization, and they're the ones that have kind of started this program. And then locally, it's the Girl Scouts of Greater Chicago and Northwest Indiana. So that's who I was working with for this story specifically. And they do, like I said, they do training for some of the mentors and folks that want to provide curriculum or teach the girls a skill. So you can just reach out to them, and then they'll take it from there. But some of the other new badges that rolled out recently, too, focus on robotics and mechanical engineering, kind of just computer science in general, and space science, which is where that NASA one came in that I mentioned earlier. So there are a lot of really interesting ones rolling out. And, you know, speaking with some of the parents at this workshop I was at, they were, you know, one told me, one of the moms was like, you know, this isn't something that I know a lot about. It's not something I can teach my kids. So it's important. It was important for her as a mom to make sure that her girls were getting you know, good foundation in math and science, but also just the age they were at with cybersecurity. You know, they're kind of starting to get their own phones and get into social media. And she was like, how do I teach them, you know, the good and bad in Facebook, of Facebook, or, you know, the good and bad of the internet, you know? So it was something that I think that was very relevant for the girls at that age as well.
Definitely. And did you have a sense of when this program is going to be rolling out for a little bit older Girl Scouts?
No, they said they don't have a timeline yet, but it sounds like it'll be fairly recent. I think usually when they roll out badges, this is how they do it with the younger cohort first and then with the older girls. So I don't know, maybe next year. I'm not exactly sure. They didn't have a set plan.
Very cool. Well, I love hearing updates about Girl Scouts. Thank you so much, Ali Marotti, business reporter at Chicago Tribune, for being with us today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure. All right, we're going to take a little break, get you to news in just a bit, all that good stuff. And on the other side of news, we're going to be talking a bit about Black Friday. Take a look at some numbers from yesterday and in years past. And we're going to take a look at a story that deals with the possibility that Chicago households might be paying a lot more for heat this winter. That and more when we return here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. It is seconds away from
me. I want to pull in Bob one sec.
I'm pulled in.
What's happening, Griffin?
I forgot that I was on the air, but I wanted to ask you. It's Small Business Saturday. I just wanted to ask you about the small business you patronized.
I did. I went over to Central Camera over there on Wabash on my way over here from the train station, and I was buying some film because, you know, camera film. Remember that stuff? And then I bought a roll, which they've discontinued this particular variety, and so they've jacked up the price. I bought the roll, and then I was asking about another kind of cheaper kind. He goes, oh, here, just take it. So that was my little small business nice story.
Oh.
So I bought a roll, and then I got a roll just because we were chit-chatting. It was very cool.
Because human beings and small business.
Exactly.
That doesn't happen on Amazon.com.
No, it sure doesn't.
Or maybe some version of it does.
Yeah.
Probably no.
Not the same way.
No, not in the same way.
Doesn't warm
all.
Your heart like that.
Right. This was the throwback because it was camera film and the little
I was going to say, so, you were like
double throwback.
Hitting the vintage on all levels right.
right
there.
Yeah, the ultimate throwback of talking to someone.
Yeah.
That's right. So retro.
It's very
wow.
vintage. Yeah.
You have conversations with right. people. Weird. What's that like?
It's true. It's sadly true.
Really, it was kind of odd. And then I put on my spats, you know.
Yeah, if maybe you could, I don't know, text or tweet me what you think about that, because I can imagine.
I'll send it via telegraph.
Even better. Please send a telegram for the rest of that. Anyway. Mm-hmm. 720 WGN. Hello, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Did you do the Black Friday thing? I feel like it's become my tradition to come onto the radio the Saturday after Black Friday and question its existence but its purpose and why it still continues to exist. What do you think, Griffin? Did you shop yesterday? Did you?
No.
Yeah, no, I don't. No. Here's what really gets me very sideways about Black Friday. First of all, you don't tell me when to shop. I will shop when I want. That's A. You know what I mean? Like, I get people want to get a jump on things, but it's like this very
even if they were handing things out for free, you'd be like, if I want it, I'll get it.
It's that.
You don't tell me.
You don't tell me.
To take this free anything. Yeah.
Secondly, I think the celebrating that stores open earlier and earlier to the point that it's like, we open at 2 p.m. on Thanksgiving Day. Come on. Let people have a day off, please.
Yeah. Well, I feel that. I mean, but that's not even the conversation. That's like, that's been the conversation for a long time. Now I feel like it's about month-long sales. I mean, it starts November 1st.
That is exactly my third point, and the deals are not that good. It's like the deals have already started. So few are specific to Black Friday.
Yeah, and I feel like in the week or 2 weeks prior to Black Friday, I was kicking around some unfounded thoughts along the lines of, like, is it even a thing anymore?
Because
the deals are already there. You can already get them all online. And it just seems like it's more of a ceremony. Like, the people mm-hmm. who do Black Friday now, it's more of just they want to do it. It's not so much about it is about the deals, but, like, there's also something about just every year this is what I do and the tradition of it.
That's
I think that might be true to a certain extent. But then looking at some of the numbers, it's a little you know, there's so many numbers from all over, like, the retail space from yesterday,
mm-hmm.
that they're kind of hard to read.
Right, at this point.
As a trend.
That's right.
But they do look good. Like, it was a big Black Friday.
Yeah, and there is some economic speculation going on from experts that it will be a very favorable holiday shopping season, that people are poised to spend a lot of money,
yeah.
partly because, and I guess I never really thought of it this way, but partly because of the way the calendar falls, with Thanksgiving falling a little early and Christmas after a weekend, like on a Tuesday, you've got that big shopping weekend that usually will get in a lot of last minute shopping, like encourage and stimulate more shopping to happen,
right.
and that Thanksgiving falling slightly earlier will kind of extend the window.
That's interesting.
I know. I never really thought about that. I just figured people just, you know, shop for their peeps.
Well, and you think it's like, oh, it's dying. But then on John's show prior to this, we were playing some audio from, you know, you see fights break out at Target or Walmart or wherever.
That,
I guess you can always find those if you're looking.
Right.
But maybe there's less. We hope there's less. I felt like I was seeing headlines about, like, the culture is kind of changing. It's not as crazy.
That's right. Well, I think, you know, after that very... I don't know, it was a couple years ago, Walmart had a situation in which people pushed through a glass and injured somebody.
Yep.
And so since then, Walmart has, I think, to probably avoid charges, you know, they've contracted with, you know, security firms and law enforcement to really, how do we deal with this crowd? Because I think it used to be, I don't know, I mean, I'm thinking like in the 80s, right? Like in particular, like the Cabbage Patch Kid craze, like that Christmas in particular, when women were beating each other in stores over these ridiculous dolls, right?
Yeah.
It was both horrifying and almost funny. People were just like, this is so ridiculous. What a fascinating cultural happening that,
yeah.
you know, something is that popular. And so I think there's always some degree of fascination attached to like what people are willing to do and what crowd mentality does.
Yeah.
But that just turns my stomach. Like someone putting another human being's safety in peril over a purchase. Like no TV deal is that good. You know, no sale item. You know, and I know electronics are usually the big thing. Like if you get in before 6 a.m., you can get this big deal on a TV. And I get that we all need to, you know, be thoughtful with how we spend our money and take advantage of opportunities to save where we can. I get that. But also, come on.
Yeah,
I would say this too.
Yeah,
like as an introvert, the idea of being in a big crowd and pushing through stuff that does nothing for me. But a friend of mine, like that's the tradition in her family. They all go, they have their Thanksgiving, and then they just go and start shopping, and they think it's so ridiculous. I think they're probably a little drunk at that point. You know? And it's sort of like, sure, I bought this for that person. I was, you know, coming off the Thanksgiving wine.
You know, it's no judgment. If that's what you want to do, God bless. It's never super appealed to me. Also, I worked on Friday, but if you have the opportunity, you know, go for it. If it makes you happy, I guess. Oh, I forgot what my other point was, but no, go forth, go with God.
Do your thing. You
be
do
happy.
You, people.
I had a better point to make.
No, I could tell. You had your point-making face on.
It's a good one,
and
isn't
I could
it?
Tell, like, oh, well, Griffin's about to say something really great.
Sales from yesterday are supposed to hit, or they were estimated to hit a record $23 billion. But that also includes online sales, too, is the thing.
Right, and I know there's sometimes the Cyber Monday.
Oh, that's what I was thinking of. It's funny that the run of days that Black Friday has now...
That's right.
Given birth to. So there's today's Small Business Saturday, which just seems like a reaction to people crowding the
that's
big
right.
box stores. That,
although now Small Business Saturday is kind of owned by American Express.
Right, that's true.
You know, and it's kind of their thing. So I don't know if I'd be curious to
look
into that.
There's a little tension there.
Right. Some small business. It's like, I can't even afford to take American Express payments and you guys have co-opted this thing. Yeah. Sunday doesn't have a name, I don't think.
Sunday is just Sunday, but then, yeah, you have Cyber Monday, which seems even more useless now
right.
than like Black Friday, because every day is Cyber Monday.
That's right.
And then Giving Tuesday. I do think it's interesting that Black Friday is a day that we feel a little conflicted about in the culture, to the point where people are like, okay, we have more important things that we should give days to
yeah.
take away attention from what some people think is kind of an abominable display. Other people see it as an opportunity, and
yeah,
maybe they're both a little right.
It is one of those kind of like weirdly light polarizing topics. You know, that I mean, I've brought it up.
We can get serious. We can make it more tense in here.
Well, I mean, one time I brought it up on one of the evening programs, and I had like room in the segment to talk about it and take calls, and people really had some really strong feelings about it. I mean, that ranged from a lot of things.
Yeah.
It wasn't really just about Black Friday. It was, you know, some people were saying this is capitalism at its worst, that we would say, I don't want to be with my family. I want to push through and buy, you know, mass-produced, manufactured, you know, junk.
Yeah.
Other people were saying it is being with your family. Some people were saying it's stimulating the economy. Some people were saying I'm a retail worker and it's the worst day in the world. You know, it was really like a very wide-ranging conversation.
And people who look down on it, as I think I kind of do, but there is something about that feels a little classist on its surface.
That came up too. Yeah, that's like easy for you to say.
Yeah.
You know that
if you don't need these deals, good
right,
for you.
That's
but
right.
But then, it, you know, they are on items that it's like you don't need to. It's just, you know, it's tricky.
You want to impress me? Like, have a Black Friday sale on, like, insulin or something. You know, like, something people need. You know what I'm saying? Like, things people actually need. Groceries, insulin.
I don't love the optics of that. They're like, come get your insulin.
I mean, it might be hard to really make a sparkly marketing message. But you know what I'm saying? Like, instead of a TV, maybe if it's really about, you know, helping people to save money, maybe it's about more useful things. Diapers, you know, things like that. Tires.
Yeah, get on that for next year.
The most practical wet blanket idea I've ever had.
I do like it.
Amy Guth's super practical Black Friday solution. There it is. All right, we're going to take a little break. And on the other side of the break, we are going to be talking about why it is that some Chicago households might be paying a lot more for heat this winter. All that and more when we come back here on 720 WGN. WGN. Hey there, it's Amy Guth here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. We're joined now by Steve Daniels, senior reporter at Crain's Chicago Business, who wrote about the possibility that Chicago households could pay a lot more for heat this winter and why. And I know that's going to be a very important conversation to get to the bottom of, especially as we are looking at some winter storm activity moving into the area. So, Steve, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's always a pleasure to have you on. Thanks for joining us again. So what is happening here? Why are we looking at potentially higher heating costs this year in particular?
The main reason is because the cost of natural gas is higher than it's been in several years, at least in the future markets, which is the best indicator we've got right now and really always as to the trajectory of natural gas prices. So they're about 50% higher than they were this time last year. That doesn't translate into percentage increases that high in your heating bills, thank goodness, but and there are ways for the utility to mitigate some of that, but you can't mitigate away all of it. So just unless we have an extremely warm winter, we're going to be paying more for heat and probably considerably more.
And so what will that look like? If you're saying it looks like maybe the utility company will be able to offset some of it, but not all. So what will that look like on a household bill?
Well, last year in Chicago, the average household and, you know, obviously the households run the gamut in terms of their usage. But the average household is the best thing we have to go by. And they spent $780-some last year from November through March. This year, People says it's projecting $802, but that they're also projecting it's going to be a warmer winter than last year. If the winter is the same or similar, you'd be seeing more like $840 using People's own calculations, and that doesn't necessarily take into account the higher natural gas costs, at least in its totality. So it could be more than that too. But whatever it's going to be, unless we got an extremely warm winter, it's going to be noticeably higher.
And so what are these things that you mentioned that the utility company can or is maybe doing to offset some of those costs? How does that part work for passing that on to
consumers? The utility, unlike electricity, gas can be stored, and the utility stores gas at prices, you know, that it purchased the gas at earlier. If those are cheaper, it can release some of that gas from storage at the cheaper price and offset the higher prices it's having to purchase gas just to meet demand in the wintertime. So that's the main tool it has. Utilities also use some modest hedging programs where they buy forward during the summertime. In this case, gas prices would have been cheaper then. They really didn't start spiking up until about 3 weeks ago, and it was just as we had very cold weather in the eastern part of the country, and we also nationally had storage levels that were lower than they'd been in past years. So that caused traders to speculate that the price to meet demand was going to need to be higher.
And then, as you note in the story that you wrote at ChicagoBusiness.com, and for those of you who follow me on social media, I'll be sure and tweet it out after the program so you can read it for yourself. But as you note in that story, there's also a construction fees. There's replacement of pipes and things like that attached to this too. Is, you know, how does, and those prices seem like they're perhaps going up as well.
Oh yeah, and they have been going up for the last several. So that's been sort of the issue, is that people's is spending like it's never spent before on capital projects every year, with budgets of $300 million annually. All of that, and they recover some of that expense in a surcharge that they impose on customers. Right now, the average customer, average residential customer, is paying about $7-$8 a month. No matter when it is, the summertime, wintertime, then that's just tacked on to the bill. So we've been seeing those kinds of costs go up now for the last several years, and there's been a lot of speculation that if once natural gas prices also went up, we would start seeing some real issues in terms of home heating affordability in the city of Chicago among lower-income people, seniors on a fixed income, et cetera. This winter could be a real test of that. You know, speculation, whether that speculation was true or maybe overblown. So we're, you know, but I do think there are a lot of signs of stress in terms of being able to afford natural gas bills.
Right. And certainly when we start looking at the most vulnerable people in our population, you know, and people on fixed incomes, elderly, things like that, we really, I think that's where the cracks tend to show first, and that's who we're failing first. So are there any, you know, measures that our regulators are working on to try to, you know, help people that might really feel that in a more substantial way?
Well, Peoples has been talking about contributing more to share the warmth fund and things like that that are designed to assist people with their bills who can't afford them. But no, regulators have been doing next to nothing about this, and they've essentially said that their hands are tied by state law, that they can't really tell the utility to spend less ahead of time. Lisa Madigan, the Illinois Attorney General, disagreed with that legal position, but nonetheless, that's the state of play right now. This is all going to come to a head at some point. The trajectory is nothing but higher in terms of the city of Chicago and heating bills. Last winter, Chicagoans paid on average 80% more than suburban customers of NICOR did. That was by far the huge biggest gap that I've ever seen between what city residents pay and what suburbanites pay. And the trend on that score just seems to be going more in that direction. So eventually this is going to be a political issue. You've seen some signs in the city council. A hearing is scheduled for early next year on it. You may see some action in the General Assembly in Springfield too. So I see almost no way that this does not become a political issue in the next year or two.
Right. It certainly seems like it is pointing that way. Well, we will keep turning to you for the latest, of course, as it continues to unfold, as we do, and we'll have you back on to talk about it once that head is reached, for sure, because I agree. It sounds like it's going to be a contentious political battle.
Yeah, and right now, let's just cross our fingers that the winner's not, you know, some kind of polar vortex or something, because then you're going to really see a problem.
Oh, let's for many reasons, let's not have another polar vortex. That was really rough. Let's not do that. But the heating bill is just one of those reasons, but for sure. All right. Well, thank you so much, Steve Daniels, senior reporter
Absolutely.
At Crane's Chicago Business. Talk to you next time.
Yeah. Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. We're going to take a little break, get you to news, all that good stuff, and we're going to check in and see what's happening on the Startup Showcase show here in just a bit on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, that does it for me here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. But before we go, Griffin, you said we had a caller during that last segment.
Yeah, a woman mentioned for people struggling to keep up with energy costs, there is the Low Income Home Energy Assistance Program. LIHEAP is the is the acronym there, and that's worth looking into online to see if you apply or what they can do for you, because that is something that keeps families safe and healthy.
That's right.
Once through the winter.
Yeah. Once temperatures drop, we have to look out for people. So, you know what? For those of you who follow me on social media, I will be sure and share a link to that organization as well. And let's all help each other out. Let's now, though, turn things over to our friend Scott Catoon for the Startup Showcase. What's happening today?
We have a Startup Showcase.
Yeah, you do.
Like literally. A lot of times we come on the show and we get like one person or we like bounce around. Today we have two call-in startups pitching. The first one, Nori. Which is funny because we're called Technori. We have no relationship with them, but it's a climate change sort of marketplace. So you can help change, you know, help hopefully for the positive, change the climate, which I think is given what's going on. So we're going to find out.
Okay.
I actually have no idea how it works. I know how the marketplace piece works. I mean, essentially you put money on a marketplace and you can kind of give back and it helps sort of like organize funding.
Right.
But I'd love to know how it actually makes a difference.
Interesting.
So we'll find out about that. And then another one who I think was actually on the show once before, but they're raising money again, called Bandwagon. And the idea there is that, you know, if you're one of those people who buys tickets online and then you go to the event and the tickets aren't any good, that stops it. I kind of thought we solved that problem already.
Yeah, I thought so too.
But I don't know. We'll find out more.
I solved it by I just don't go to stuff.
That's a great way to do it.
That's how I solved it.
It's that or just like, I think I'm just past buying tickets on eBay.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just sort of like, all right. If I'm going to go, I'm going to go and buy the tickets the right way and just sort of...
Although, you know, I feel like you can... There are last-minute deals.
Yeah.
I have some degree of impulsiveness, so sometimes
But that's what
I'm
Facebook's
like,
for. Does anyone have tickets to this?
I was going to say, usually it's like something like through a personal connection or something like that.
Yeah, I just...
Like,
I don't,
okay, maybe I will go to Riot Fest. Anybody got tickets? Let's go.
I don't feel like going on eBay anymore and like meeting someone at a random BP. It's just not... Let's just say I've done that a couple of times.
Please tell us more about things you do on weekends.
That's a whole other show. That's what the Startup Showcase should be. It should be that.
Strangers I have met from the internet.
The stories I could tell you from meeting random strangers to exchange goods for money. This is gone. We have derailed.
Yeah, I'm going to just leave and leave you to it now is what I'm going to do.